Accession number 32390, Mr. Harold Checkett's Reel 4. Now, what happened when you got back to the UK? What were you posted to?
Well, first thing was I went home, of course, to get a few weeks' leave, because I'd been deprived of leave for a long time. And I met my father down the lane from our farm, and you know, while I was in on the Maldives, I'd grown a beard, right? And the first thing my father said when I met him, he was coming down the lane to meet me from the train, and he said, the first greeting I got from him was, why the hell don't you take that thing off? Right, and then anyway, I went back and was now sent to Leon Solent. Having changed to meteorology, I had to go to Leon Solent. And
now what was happening there?
They had what they call a pool of ratings, always, you know, going from to ships and things. But also, of course, it was very soon that they, after I got there in the January 44, that preparations began for in detail for the D-Day.
Now, were they actually training you at Leon Solent, or did they just tell you to report that?
There was further training to take place, especially for me, who'd only known tropical charts and maps and things, details of how much to put in a report and so on. So there was quite a bit of training, and there, when I was there...
Was this a meteorological school, a Royal Naval Meteorological School?
It was, with the Commander Edwards in charge, and because I had to be sort of inducted in the English weather and how to do it over this side, they put somebody in, to teach me how to do it. Jean. And so after Jean had schooled me in this, I got landed with another job to go down to Western Point near Beer, and I was with another chap, Taffy Thomas, and our job was to watch the waves coming up and down poles, which had been hundreds of them, at least there may not have been hundreds, it fitted into the sea to see how swell, you know, hits the shore, what it does as it comes in farther, does it go higher, does it go quicker, and all that sort of thing. So we had that job of sorting that out, and I only
found... And where's Beer?
Beer is a it well the
is it B-E-E-R or yeah. B-I-E-R?
B-E-E-R, yes, it's
where's it near?
Blimey.
Cornwall?
No. Roborough Hill. Now what's it, did it go on down to, oh dear.
It is in
Dorsetshire.
Yes. Dorset, and that was our job down there, was to send reports back several times a day
to
the Admiralty, and it was really for a person, Colonel Yates, whom we've since been in touch with, and I found out all sorts of things that I was doing in the war that I didn't know in the last few years.
What was the point of this watching waves?
Well, the point was to see how swell, when they know what the swell is in the mid-channel, how it's hitting the shore. Obviously, they were interested in what it was like on the coast of France, and they probably picked an area down there. There were 50 of these spots around the country so that they could match up where the different parts in France were as closely as possible to know what the likely rise and fall of tides and swell would be on that particular spot.
Were you on a detachment then to Western Point?
Yeah.
For how long?
We were only there for about 3 weeks, and then the Coast Guards took over and to send the rest of the report, because they wanted us back to... they wanted me and Taffy to join with Jean and another wren named Pam Pinks to go down to Southwick House for a supporting Met, what would you call it, Met office, I suppose, down at Southwark House for the invasion to get the
Admiral Ramsay.
It was Admiral Ramsay wanted this, and of course we'd got this Commander Fleming, and he'd been on one of our other battleships. It was in charge of us four, and he'd got two other officers with him, a fellow named Smith, and ours was Tunnicliffe, and we had to sort ourselves into watches down there when we got.
How many in total were there of you?
Of us, there were, well, there was the seven. Yes, that would be seven. Just seven of us.
And we were linked to the Admiralty.
Yes. Well, we were taken by an open lorry it was open at the back, and we didn't know where we were going. That was the four ratings anyway. We found the officers and the other people there when we got there, and the Met Office ready waiting for us to start our work. And we had to sort
our... This is at Southwark House.
This was at Southwark House, the headquarters of for the invasion, Eisenhower's headquarters. And all those people were there. And, of course, they had to be fed regularly by Stagg, you know, Captain Stagg.
So tell me, who was in the unit? There's seven of you, say. What were the seven, and what did each of them do?
Well, we were all plotting charts. The four of us were plotting charts. The two officers were were they lieutenants or sub-lieutenants? Yes. We were doing it for Commander Fleming, who was at the top, and he was briefing all the time Captain Stagg, who would then take the information to the commanders, the Supreme Commander, with Eisenhower and the others all there as well, Monty, and they were all there, you know, and... we knew the importance of the thing, and we were all quick plotters, and I think accurate plotters, or else they wouldn't have chosen us to be there.
Well, was Stagg not actually a meteorologist then?
Yes.
Well, he was a meteorologist, but he wasn't given a separate office and ratings and so on for himself. He was the go-between who had to cream off all the important things from what all the other people said at Wide Wing, and Dunstable, and the other American stations, important ones, and ourselves. His job was to present Eisenhower with the very best predictions that he could make on the weather for the next 24.
He was only down there 2 or 3 days, wasn't he?
Mm, yes. Oh, he appeared sometimes in the office, and when we were doing things, and sometimes I had to go out, or Eisenhower wanted to come into the office and things like that, because they wanted to talk, you know.
What was he like, John Stagg?
Well, he was tall, Scott, Dour. I think he was ginger. I don't know much else. He was quite impressive, but very serious. Very serious. But, I mean, it wasn't that I saw him a lot. But we all saw him a bit, but nobody saw him a lot.
Now, what exactly were you doing then? What was your daily routine?
My daily routine was in watches, sometimes including midnight, right through, naval watches. And it was to receive the information coming through on the teleprinter and plot it as quickly as you could. You had a job to race the teleprinter, of course, that sort of horrible machine behind the door. And but we managed it generally.
So you weren't creating any information. You were merely taking the information off the teleprinter.
Yes.
Now, how do you plot it? Can you explain what plotting means in as much detail as possible? Because remember, you know, and your wife knows, but people listening to this recorder in 100 years' time won't know.
Well, I think it's done automatically now. But what we had to do was to pick on the number at the beginning of the code and find the station, find the plottings that gave you indication of which station it was. And you got to know these stations, you know, in different parts of the country, all over, and in France, and in eventually in Germany as well. But you had a number for the station, and then I think the wind direction came pretty early on. You put an arrow away from the little circle you've made on the station in ink, and if it was raining, you put one dot or two dots or three dots according to how heavy, or snow, you put a little asterisk thing instead of snow, and this little tiny place on the map would hold an enormous amount of information for someone who could decode the plotting you'd done. I mean, of course the wind direction was on there, the temperature was on there, the humidity was on there, the barometric pressure was on there, so that they could draw these lines very, very quickly when they were accustomed to it.
Now, so you would put these on, and then would you do anything else? You'd write these little notes. Anything else you'd do?
No,
would you draw the lines?
No, I didn't draw the lines. We didn't draw the lines.
You wouldn't do any interpretation then?
No. We knew what was going on, of course. You couldn't help it, but we didn't interpret, and we didn't draw any lines. We didn't draw any fronts. We didn't draw any isobars.
So who would?
Well, that was done by the two people, the two lieutenants. That was done by Tunnicliffe and Smith. As quickly as they could get hold of the charts, they more or less snatched them from us sometimes, you know, to get at it, because they'd got to present it to Commander Fleming.
So they, now what would you, I know you didn't do it, but what did they actually do then?
They had to draw all the things on it that would be most helpful to Commander Fleming.
Now, in a modern, well, not modern, but in a weather map from the 60s or 70s, they'd have the barometric, they'd have the lines,
yes,
the barometric,
that's right,
pressure. So
yes,
they'd draw them on.
Yes, they'd all go on.
And they used to put weather fronts on with different,
yes,
symbols.
Right. Yes,
is that what they'd do?
Well, yes, they would look at all the reports, and judging where it was raining or not or whatever, they would draw the front round down through where it was rain or snow or whatever, and that would give them the fronts.
Now, and then these two would then pass the information on to Stagg.
They would pass it to Fleming. Fleming would be the one who passed it to Stagg.
Right.
No, not really. Stagg, he took it to Admiral Ramsay. He always took the charts to Admiral Ramsay, and then Stagg saw it twice, that's all, just before D-Day.
Well, obviously there's some controversy about that, as they perhaps could hear. Now, so did you realise what was going on?
Yes.
Now tell us about how you knew. I mean, did you know this was D-Day, and if so, how?
Yes.
Did you know?
Yes. Oh dear, that is a tricky one, isn't it? You couldn't be unaware. You see, we were in touch with other places in the country. We were in touch with Dunstable, we were in touch with Admiralty, and we were in touch with Wide Wing. And
what are those places?
Well,
let's do that first, because you mentioned Dunstable and Wide Wing before. I didn't know what you meant, really. I mean, what are these? Are these other weather stations the same as yourself? Or
yes. Yes, they were places where the same sort of information was being cobbled together, really.
Yeah,
you know, Dunstable obviously was the general one for Britain, and it's, you know, now elsewhere. But it was the way of getting at the sort of best possible picture of the real weather. And of course, there were controversies nearly always between the people who were cobbling up together the same sort of charts.
The Admiralty, the Air Ministry, and the Americans were all at it.
Yes.
Right. So, what happens next then? How did you know about D-Day?
Well, we knew because we knew it was imminent because of all the vehicles, you know, blocking every road almost on the side and in the road. And when the movement started, you know, that was an indicator. In any case,
so you didn't pick it up from the work you were doing.
Yes, we did. We couldn't help it. I mean, you could not do this. The excitements or the fears and the other things were in the office, apprehensions, and especially when the weather was pretty bad, you know, and it was bashing against the windows, you know, you knew it was bad. And but of course, then there were these clearances going to come. You could see they'd spotted them up north of Ireland, you know. Oh, there's the window of opportunity coming our way, and this sort of thing, and it must go. We knew it had been postponed on the 5th.
How did you know? I mean, did you know it was meant to be on the 5th before it was cancelled, or did you just know when it was cancelled?
We just knew when it was cancelled.
Yes. And of course, the funny thing was, our leave was never, ever stopped. We were able to walk into
Cosham.
Jean and I walked the area. We used to see all these troops in the woods, and we knew they'd gone. You know, when they.
I thought you were in Southwark House, London.
Yeah, oh, no. No, this Southwark House is right on the south coast. You see.
Right. Okay.
we knew that the things were all disappearing or had disappeared. And of course, the planes going over was another indicator. And
you didn't really know from the work you were doing, because all these things are things that are obvious to everybody. They're not from the work you're doing, if you see what I mean.
Well, you knew that as long as the weather was horrible, they wouldn't dare to go. You knew what the weather was like on the other side, because we'd got the maps of France with all the stations there as well. You see, so it couldn't possibly go if the waves are 10 foot high.
And did you get any weather reports from France or from?
Yes.
Oh yes,
how?
Yes. It's very tricky, isn't it? I don't know. They were breaking the codes.
German codes.
Yes, they were breaking the codes, and I think they were probably easier to break for France than they were for Germany. But of course, France was the interesting one that we wanted.
So they were obtaining weather intelligence from from French code.
From Bletchley Park.
Bletchley Park.
That's right.
So that gave you an extra raft of information that you could use.
Yes.
We got that from the Admiralty. They rang us up and told us.
And they scrambled it, and it was so difficult to hear when the line scrambled. Oh. They scrambled the phones, you see. So
from where?
From all these other places that we were in touch with. And sometimes it was very difficult to make out what they were saying. It's a wonder they didn't make some big mistakes, but they didn't.
Now, were you aware of, I mean, the decision not to go on the 5th and the decision to go on the 6th was, I mean, we've got recordings of Stagg talking about, they make it at, certainly make it a very dramatic decision, this decision. I'm not saying it was or it wasn't. I'm just asking you, were you aware at the time of how important that was and how much was standing on whether you mapped your maps properly?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Yes. We did know. You couldn't be unaware of it, could you?
No. The officer never spoke to us about it at all until after D-Day, and then they started talking about Omaha, and I'd never heard of Omaha or anything like that.
Utah and Omaha and Sword.
They didn't speak to us at all.
The different parts of the beach, you know, which they were heading
Tunnicliffe for. Tunnicliffe never said a word to us. Or,
so you didn't know where it was going to be or anything like that?
No.
Well, no, you didn't, but you couldn't be off guessing.
So where would you guess it would be?
Well, where...
where it was?
North of France, yes, you couldn't.
But had you guessed it was Normandy? Because all the deception was for it was Calais.
Yes, I know. But that was a deception for the Germans, wasn't it?
No, I just wondered if you'd realised it was Normandy before it happened.
It's
very difficult to say this.
To remember, right?
Very difficult to remember that now. Now that I know what it was.
I can see that's very difficult for you to separate in your head. Yeah. So anything else about the period of the time when they actually made the decision between the 4th and the 6th of June that you recall? Did anything change, or do you remember any other details about that period?
Well, they were in a great panic.
You could feel that they were tense, and well, it is difficult to say. I mean, it's a matter of reading people's minds from their own movements and faces and so on. But it was terribly serious, and
So what happened after the I mean, did you carry on doing it? I mean, there was a huge storm that smashed Mulberry.
Oh yes, that was
shortly afterwards.
Yeah, a fortnight later.
That's right. Yes. I mean, we were still on duty.
Oh yes, we went on for three more months. It was just one week in a dozen weeks, really, what we were doing there.
So you were at Southwark House. Now, where is Southwark House? It's on the south coast. Where on the south coast?
Well, it's not very far from Leon Solent and Portsmouth. It's nearer to Portsmouth, I should think. Yes.
I'll look it up. That's my ignorance.
We used
to
go along on this port downhill, we used to go for walks all the way around.
So when did you get there?
We were there by the first of the last day of April or the 1st of May.
And you were there until
September.
September, yes.
Anything else about that period that you remember?
Well, we were always expecting the Germans to start, to find us and load us with a few bombs, but nothing ever happened like that. But what we did happen was the doodlebug started going when Jean and I were out walking along, I think that was on along Portsdown Hill. Mm-hmm. We saw more than one of them come down,
That's a V1.
The V1s, yes.
Now, this Jean you refer to is now Jean Checkett, who's the other voice that you may or may not be able to hear. No, it's fine, don't worry about it at all. But that's who the other voice is, who was intimately involved in the whole thing as well. So the V1s, but they didn't hit anything in what, they may have hit something, but they didn't hit your headquarters.
No.
Anything else in that last 3 or 4 months? I mean, the storm that came, did you spot that coming on the 2 weeks after?
They didn't spot the seriousness of it. No.
The old joke from the 60s and 70s was that weather reporting was pretty inaccurate. This is 20 years before that.
Yes,
we were aware of the inaccuracy, the inherent inaccuracy of weather forecasting, of that, because it's just such an imprecise science then, or do you not think it was?
I think they got it as right as they could have done under the circumstances. And, of course, they were in America already doing 5-day forecasts, which I don't think anybody had ever dared to do from Dunstable. there was a chap named Pettersson, wasn't it, down in Dunstable? But, we had 2 or 3 days. It was a very outside, and you really wanted it to look pretty settled, either for horrible weather or for very clear weather, to know that it was going to last for 3, let alone 5. So
it was a very tense business.
It was. I mean, you were trying to do do the impossible almost.
Did you have confidence in your own work? As a section? Or were you too aware of the pitfalls?
Well, we were aware of the pitfalls, of course.
Did it make you think when you didn't spot how serious that big storm was? That's what I mean, because that could have been 2 weeks earlier. It would have been a disaster.
Yes, that would have been terrible, wouldn't it? Well, that caught everybody by surprise. I'm sure it caught the ferocity of it. Caught Eisenhower and Fleming and everybody. because it was so powerful, it was so unusual. You see, there's always a tendency, I suppose, for people high up in any discipline to go on precedent. And of course, they'd studied what had happened in the past, you know, and things like that almost never happened. So it must have been a terrible shock for meteorologists when what you were talking about blew up a fortnight later.
They weren't very good meteorologists at the time. They didn't know much about it.
Now, the other thing is, did you have any reports from the Atlantic coming in from ships? I suddenly realised we haven't asked you this, but because most of our weather comes from the Atlantic, yeah. I presume. Had you got any system? Or were you using the islands out there, or what were you using
yes.
to get as opposed to, I can understand what we've talked about, the stations in England
yes.
and the rest of it, but what about the Atlantic? What arrangements were made for there?
There were one or two Met ships, weren't there, placed in the Atlantic. I think there was one not very far south of Iceland, and then there'd be another not very far north of Ireland. And there were three or four which were quite important, and in fact it was probably...
Were these fixed weather ships, or...?
Yes, or they would at least, in their codes, which would change regularly so that the Germans would be foxed, they would tell you exactly where they were before you started to get your information, weather information.
And would you get reports from ERA, which was neutral, but yeah. is also part of the I mean, yeah.
No, we didn't get it, actually, but what we had as substitute were reports from planes which would fly out over a particular path and then fly back, perhaps at another level or
and
whatever.
We got the Admiralty ones.
And
well.
Yes, that's right. You know, there were supplementary reports which sometimes were absolutely key to the understanding of a front or where the front was, or you know, the lowest point, or all sorts of things.